Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether out of town or out of time, with Busey's mobile, deposit checks, view balances, and pay people and bills from your device. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the sixth day of September 2018. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the Ewing, Illinois demonstration site that belongs to U of I Extension. We'll talk more today about specialty crops and what you might be able to put into your field other than commodities like corn and soybeans. But of course, we'll cover those two crops with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting out of Channel Seeds, along with looking at the weather forecast with Mike Tenora, too. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, and we'll do it all right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, because I'm in southern Illinois at the Ewing demonstration plot, no update to the commodity numbers. I just don't have them in front of me at this point. However, I do want to talk to you just a little bit about some of the other kind of specialty crops that you might consider on your commodity farm operations. We're joined by Mohammed Babadous, who is a vegetable crop specialist for U of I Extension. Thanks for being here. Tell me about the pumpkins and some of the other crops that you work with in the state of Illinois that can be adapted really well to our climates and our environment.
In my portfolio, I do have roughly 79 different crops, about 15 fruit crops and nut crops, and the rest of them vegetables, 64 different vegetables. Pumpkin is the most valuable and widely grown. And we are in Illinois, we are pumpkin state. We do grow about 25,000 acres of pumpkins every year. And next to us is Ohio, New York and California. They are about 6,000 to 8,000 acres. We are three times at least more than any other state. And Morton, Illinois is known international capital or world capital of pumpkin.
So the Morton in the Peoria area, of course, is one of those places where processing pumpkins are used. And I think if the number doesn't elude me, about 95% of the pumpkin pie filling that you will find comes from around that area. Although we're in Ewing, south of Mount Vernon, are we using jack-o'-lantern pumpkins here rather than processing pumpkins?
Yeah, we in the southern Illinois, we grow jack-o'-lantern pumpkins. Most of the processing pumpkins, as you mentioned, stand usually about 92%, more than 90% in a way to say. And we had about 6,000 acres in 1998, and 2 years ago we were up more than 16,000 acres. That's what really the processing pumpkin. Right now, out of about 25,000 acres, half of them is processing pumpkins, other half a variety of jack-o'-lantern pumpkins.
How hard is it for a producer to put pumpkins, whether it's the processing or jack-o'-lantern pumpkins into, and I don't know whether they go into the rotation or just into their commodity or crops that they grow?
Oh, we do have a good rotation. If somebody is growing processing pumpkins, needs to have a contract. We have two processors, one in Morton, one in Peoria, other than jack-o'-lantern pumpkins grown everywhere. And we have figured out the best rotation, at least 3 years, rather 4 years rotation with non-cucurbit crops. No pumpkin, no melon, no cucurbits, and even no solanaceous crop like tomato or pepper, because some of the diseases goes to both cucurbits and pepper, solanaceous crop. For 4 years of rotation with corn, soybean, wheat, and brassica would be great.
We're talking, of course, with Mohammed Babadous from the University of Illinois. More with him a bit later in the program.
WILL Agricultural Programming is supported by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by providing reliable, consistent credit and financial services to rural communities and agriculture today and tomorrow.
Dan Zwicker is Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, now joins us here on the Closing Market Report for Thursday afternoon to discuss what's happened in Chicago. Dan, thanks for being with us. Why don't you give me your assessment of where we are in this marketplace as we come through the Labor Day and look into the harvest months of September and October for corn and soybeans?
Well, I think for the most part, the market is waiting around to hear more field reports. We're starting to get, a splattering of them, but we haven't really seen any steady diet of yield reports, either verifying or negating USDA's numbers, or in a matter of fact, the more recent private crop report that Pro Farmer issued here about a week ago. So, I mean, August was a very bearish month with USDA's report. Then Pro Farmer came back with higher numbers, at least on soybeans. I think they were about the same on corn thereabouts. We've had some other private numbers. So the market, I think, is just patiently waiting to see if we're going to get actual verification of those kind of numbers when the combines roll. Now, we do have USDA up here, I think, next Wednesday or Thursday. I think they're coming out with their September crop report, and we'll see if there's any changes there. But for the most part, I think it's waiting to hear. Now, what yield reports I've heard are highly variable. I've heard some very high yields, and I've heard some very disappointing yields. And it seems to be, you know, when it was planted, and how much rain did it get, and blah, blah, blah. But we just haven't had enough. But when you look at it technically, I still think we're now corn is clearly in a sideways pattern. It's just at the bottom end of a sideways pattern, and waiting to see what the final numbers are and what kind of demand numbers start coming. Whether or not we get the deal with Canada cooked here fairly quickly, so we have basically a renewed NAFTA agreement. But I think the deal that we've already made, the agreement with Mexico, is a major step. And I never really did think we'd ever have any problem with Mexico. They just got to have the U.S. market. Without it, they're pretty well out on the limb. Canada needs us too. But Canada kind of put themselves in a position now that they're going to have to do some backtrack, and no politician likes to backtrack a little bit. So, but whatever. Now, soybeans, though, even though the July low on the November soybeans, or the July reversal on the November soybeans, is still intact, the wide basis levels have pushed the cash market below its sideways trading range. So when you look at it technically, it looks like soybeans are probably breaking out to the downside given the super wide basis. But if you look at the futures market, we're still technically sideways, or you may want to call the September contract having made kind of a double bottom formation in the soybeans, and we're trying to see whether or not that double bottom is going to hold. And the only way we're going to really know is if we get more yield data from the farmer, and then see if we get any more if we can get any kind of positive news from the trade. But I'm still generally neutral to the market. I think the market took a pretty good bruising on trade concerns, and then, you know, the weather pattern that we've had and all of these yield reports coming out way on the upper end of what anybody imagined to start the season. So I think the market's hanging in there pretty good given that. Now we're just waiting around to see if that's, you know, confirmed by the farmer when more activity gets going. And I think we're going to probably a week from today, we're going to hear a lot more activity. Now the other concern is, the Corn Belt is getting very, very wet in many areas, and that's going to start putting in some delay concerns. I've already talked to one friend of mine that lives in the upper part of Illinois, and he's already went out and got tracks for his combine already, because he just thinks it's going to be a real struggle getting this crop out. So I think a lot of farmers are probably out buying tracks right now. We'll see how much rain this hurricane gives us, I guess, over the weekend. I guess Central Illinois is supposed to be hit pretty hard, more so than any place else in the Corn Belts. But I think it's just patience, waiting to see if these yields can be confirmed. And like I said, I've talked to both sides of that equation. I just haven't heard enough of it to confirm it. Whether or not USDA yield projections are actually going to hold up, or pro farmers' numbers are going to hold up. And then I see that you put on the Twitter wire that the Farm Services Agency is going to start announcing their acreage numbers that farmers have reported to them. And that'll be interesting to see if that would indicate that there's maybe some changes coming in acreage down the road, either up or down.
Yeah, so I have had a discussion, at least with Seth Meyer, about that a little bit. He's at the World Agricultural Outlook Board. And the numbers, to be clear, from FSA have always been incorporated into the crop production, and the WASDE figures, actually into the WASDE figures, not in the crop production figure, until they update in October, which is usually when that gets updated in acreage. But there is some look at that, because they have seen them, and we've known that ever since those FSA numbers have started to come out, that the USDA, when they do their reports, see them. It's just in this time around that we will see them publicly before the FSA, before USDA's reports come out. So we'll have that opportunity to take a look at those numbers. They're out 2 days ahead of time. I think that must be on Monday, because the WASDE report is on Wednesday next week, and we'll get a look at those numbers. You've talked some about that yield. It's now at 178. You don't have a real good feel. Do you think it'll go down for corn, or do we just don't really know? And on the flip side, will the soybean number actually grow?
I don't know. Like I said, I've talked to a few farmers around in the McLean County area, and their yields are not holding up.
I heard the same thing this morning from my brother. He was talking to some producers who've been in the field in the McLean County area, and they were talking 180, 190.
Yeah.
Although I've seen a 280 as well.
Now, the April corn.
They're just a bit all over.
Yeah, the April corn is better if it got planted early. But if it got planted later, the May corn is not as good as the April corn. That's all I can really tell you. Now, I talked to a few friends that's further south, down into, south of Decatur and that area, and I think they need another 2-3 days before they're really going to get going. I think the end of the week, and of course, that's probably going to depend upon how much rain we get this weekend. But We're going to start hearing more stuff, but from what I've heard, the yields are not holding up, and some of the yields, some of the crop that the farmers are getting ready to harvest, they're not as optimistic about it as maybe they were a month ago, and they don't think it's going to be better than last year. And I think the key words that we're going to hear here, and that's what I don't care about above expectations or below expectations. I don't want to hear that. That don't tell me anything. I want to know, is it better than last year, or is it less than last year? And those are going to be the key words that we hear. And if we begin to hear a steady diet that is not as good as last year, then we got a bull market on our hands, because the market is positioned for those high-end yields. Now, if the comments start coming in, it's better than last year, I can't believe it, but it's better than last year, well, then the gates are going to open, and the fun crowd and the technical crowd will probably start pressing the downside, and who knows how far that goes. But that's going to be the key thing to hear, is it better than last year or not as good as last year? And like I said, if we start hearing that it's no better than last year, or it's a little smaller than last year, then I think we got a counter seasonal move, because the market is positioned for a big crop. And if that big crop doesn't materialize, now we'll still have a big crop. We're not going to run out of corn or beans, but just the fact that it's not going to meet the yield expectations would be quite bullish, at least for a short-term rally. Now, if something like that would occur, it may offer a selling opportunity to guys that maybe are hunting for something or hunting for a rally to sell before they really get active in the fall, or they know they need to get a few more bushels sold here before the end of the year for one reason or the other. It could generate a selling opportunity, but it's going to be difficult. The commercial grain trade, with having bought a lot of old crop corn and old crop beans during the summer, and then here over the last couple of weeks before September 1 came around, people either had to renew their storage or sell their grain. Basis levels will probably be generally slow to recover, at least early in the harvest. But toward the end of harvest, then, you know, they'll narrow once harvest starts winding down. But the carryover experience for some time, and more so in beans probably than corn, and that's just going to be real difficult to see that basis level improve any, at least in the short run. But the futures could run, we could get some short covering in that, and that may be an opportunity for people that have storage that they could put on some hedges or buy some puts or whatever, and then keep it in storage and wait for that basis to come in on them sometime after harvest, and then move that grain into the marketplace then in January or whenever they, you know, do need that extra cash.
Hey, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Okay, Todd. Take care.
Uh-huh. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Mohammed Babadous is still with us here at the Ewing Demonstration Plots in southern Illinois. We've been talking, of course, about pumpkins. However, there are some 70 vegetable crops that you take care of. What are the other options that producers might consider, in your opinion, that would be worthwhile growing in the state of Illinois?
Well, depends how who we talk to. For example, right now we have two vegetable centers. One is Arthur area, another is the Vandalia area. In the past 15, 20 years, they became really focused on vegetable production, and they go from 1 acre to more than 50 acres. Most of them are non-major growers, like, for example, Amish growers. I hesitate to identify, and they grow tomato, they grow squash, they grow pepper, they grow eggplant. Another major crop is horseradish, obviously, in Illinois, and basil is another one. We are one of the leading state in the nation for basil production. We grow roughly about 600 basil, but five times or six times cutting, that comes more than 3,000. That's more than $10 million value basil. And this is particularly important because 6-7 years ago, a major disease came known down in mildew. And we rushed and generated a very good protection, and some other state, even using our recommendation, we're doing it great.
So for producers who are listening to this thinking, I wouldn't mind trying to diversify into these kinds of products, do they contact you? How do they make that first step into thinking what this would look like in their operation?
Their operation should truly come from the several experts. I am only plant pathologist. I try to focus on the disease management. And we should have entomologists, we should have horticulture production, we do have wheat scientists. All of them, we should work for common sense, high yielding and the best quality.
That is Mohammed Babadous. He is a plant pathologist specializing in specialty crops. Then contact him if you'd like. Just look him up online at the U of I.
Let's check now on the cash grain side of the situation. Matt Bennett joins us from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds. He's out of Windsor, Illinois, but is in Minnesota today, I believe, checking on some crops. Tell me where you are and what you've seen.
Yeah, I'm actually right off of Interstate 35, south of Owatonna in Minnesota. I've got a meeting up here tonight and one again in the morning. And the crops look pretty good. I'd say the beans, relatively speaking, might look a little better yet than what the corn does. A little bit of sudden death here and there, but I think overall, you know, they had an awful wet start this spring, but I think they're still going to have pretty decent crops, maybe not quite as good as the last couple of years.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about marketing as we get into the harvest season. Producers will have some choices to be made, especially if they don't have on-farm storage for all of their bushels, both corn and soybeans. Do you have some ideas about those unpriced bushels, especially for commercial over-the-scale sales at this point, whether they should go into storage or not?
Well, you know, the problem is this year, of course, storage rates have increased just a little bit. You know, part of the reason is because they can, first of all. Second of all, is that there's a lot of old crop on hand, and so producers definitely handcuffed if they don't have enough storage. Which one would I store if I had to pick one of the two? It's hard to say, but, you know, there is a lot of carry in the bean market for sure. The thing is, if a person's going to put it into storage, they have to have a game plan on how to best put that plan into place. And typically what the elevator system does is, you know, they lock that carry in by hedging the deferred contracts, and then they wait on the basis to improve. And I got to think that this basis is going to improve at some point. If I was going to be more bullish basis, one of the two, though, I'd probably be more bullish corn. So it's awfully tough to tell. There's more carry in the bean market, but I think basis will improve more in corn than beans.
Do you think it's an okay idea to go ahead and sell both of those crops across the scale and maybe just buy them back on paper at some point?
Well, I think that that's an option a person can employ if they want to. I don't have any problem with that. And to be honest with you, I think we need to spread our risk out as much as we can and do a variety of different things. I know that we're probably going to sell some of our crop across the scale, get cash in hand, and re-own. But on the flip side, I don't want to do all of one thing because there's no way of knowing what's going to work best this year.
What do you think about the upcoming WASD and crop production numbers? Do you have an idea how they might change, especially for corn?
You know, I feel like on corn they might ease off just a shade. It sure seems that's the way most people are leaning. A lot of the surveys have indicated that maybe USDA was a touch high. I think that that's the way I would lean at this point, is that I don't think that we'll grow much. We might shrink just a shade from August, but I think the bean yield's going to go up maybe a couple of bushels. So I'm looking for an awfully big number there.
Any best advice before I let you go as producers get ready to go to the field?
Probably just need to have a plan. Let's not try to make decisions on the fly. As long as we got a plan going in, we can always modify it, but I definitely want to have some sort of a marketing plan. We're going to have a lot of bushels to handle this year, and I think that we can make the most of it and still have a decent year as long as we handle it properly.
It's always bushels times price, and you may be surprised by how much income you can get off an acre, depending on how much crop you've got coming in. It looks like a lot of farmers will have a lot of bushels this year, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be all kinds of bushels to market this year. I think that a lot of folks in Central Illinois especially are going to have the best crops of their career in some places. Now, it's not going to happen everywhere, but especially on beans, I got to think that we're going to be looking at the biggest crop we've ever seen. So I think corn, it might be a little bit more variable, but where a person has good drainage and not too much water issue, boy, there's going to be a big crop.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois.
It's National Coffee Ice Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1620, the Pilgrims set sail from England aboard the Mayflower. Initially, the trip went smoothly, but underway, they were met with strong winds and storms. One of those caused a main beam to crack, and although they were more than halfway to the destination, the possibility of turning back was considered. But using a great iron screw, probably a jack that was used for house construction, brought along by the colonists, they repaired the ship enough to continue on to the New World. In 1892, John Froelich made the first gasoline-powered tractor. It was sent to Langford, South Dakota, which lacked easy access to a wood or coal supply for steam-powered units. His 16-horsepower machine was geared for both forward and reverse motion. It was powered by a Van Dusen vertical single-cylinder gasoline engine mounted on wooden beams upon a Robinson running gear. And in 1899, Carnation began production of evaporated milk. Elbridge Stewart and a fellow business partner founded the Pacific Coast Condensed Milk Company in Kent, Washington. It was based solely on the relatively new process of evaporation. As sales began to grow, Stewart searched for a brand name for his product. While walking in downtown Seattle, he passed a tobacco shop window with cigars on display around a sign proclaiming their name, Carnation. The company was renamed the Carnation Evaporated Milk Company. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether out of town or out of time, with Busey's mobile, deposit checks, view balances, and pay people and bills from your device. Busey, your dream, our promise.
On this Thursday afternoon, we're joined by Mike Tenora. He's a T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's get right to it, because there's a big rainstorm that's going to come through at least a good portion of Illinois, and farmers are worried. Can you tell me how widespread that will be across the whole of the Corn Belt, and how much rainfall you expect and where?
Well, most of the rain from the upcoming system will fall along and south of Interstate 80. So everybody in the WILL listening area will certainly be part of this heavy rain setup. The setup is basically occurring because we have a couple of different waves of energy that are moving in from the west. We also have a cool front moving in from the north. And then on top of that, we have the remnant of Tropical Storm Gordon moving in from the south. All of these are essentially going to continue to converge on Illinois. That takes place over the next 2 to 3 days. So we're looking for some pretty big rains here, anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5 inches, with localized 5-inch totals in a swath or two of Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and or Ohio. So this is a pretty good chunk of the Corn Belt. Keep in mind, everybody to the north of the area that we've been talking about saw equally as heavy, if not heavier, rains over the last 2 weeks. About half of the soybean crop in Iowa has seen over 10 inches of rain over the last 30 days, and a similar amount in Wisconsin. By the time you add all of that up, 11% of U.S. soybean production has received at least 10 inches of rain over the last 30 days. But it isn't going to intensify, because most of the rain coming up is going to fall on some of these areas that have not been as wet over the last couple of weeks.
And then we dry out, I take it?
Well, that's a good thing. We haven't talked too much about that. But to the northwest of Illinois, it will be completely dry over the next 7 to 10 days, maybe even longer than that. So there's not much rain coming up. For Illinois and the rest of the Corn Belt, we still have to get through this rain event, but once we do that, it turns dry for a while as well, at least 7 to 10 days too. So it's going to be a lot different here in a few days from now. Temperatures on top of that are going to be pretty warm. We'll see highs in the 70s and 80s all the way through the middle of the month. That's around 4, 5, 6 degrees above normal every single day. And we could even see some highs in the mid to upper 80s on occasion. So unseasonably mild and fairly dry once we get through this rain.
Your quick assessment of problems areas in Europe and Asia, please.
Well, the big thing that we're concerned about in Europe is that we had a drought that was in place earlier in the year, and we know that affected their wheat crop. Now they're planting rapeseed and they're planting wheat again as the next season starts, and we still have pretty high coverage of drought. Even over the last 30 days, about half of the EU wheat production area has been drier than normal, including some big numbers in some different areas, especially the northern areas and in Turkey. So these areas need some rain. There's not much rain on the horizon, so Europe is going to remain an area of concern. Ukraine, the same story. Russia, the same story. All these areas have been drying out over the last 45 to 60 days with not much rain on the horizon. So we'll see how that plays out.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great, Todd. Talk to you later.
Mike Tenora is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.